somewhere out there. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, two teams of astronomers have independently come to the same conclusion about how the universe was created. It explains why matter created in the Big Bang came together to create everything that we see around us. The work draws on results from two scientific teams conducting sky surveys based in Australia and the United States. The teams announced the breakthrough jointly in London and in San Diego. The findings come out of the giant three-dimensional maps of near space produced by the two-degree field galaxy redshift survey. That's in New South Wales in Australia, in the Sloan Digital Sky Survey out of New Mexico with the San Diego team. Statistical analysis of these maps has revealed how the distribution of matter has been influenced by forces that were at work at the dawn of time. I wonder what those forces might have been. At the moment of birth, the universe contained tiny irregularities thought to have resulted from quantum or subatomic processes. These irregularities have been amplified by gravity ever since, and eventually, they say, gave rise to the galaxies we see today. In a moment, investigative mythologist William Henry. We're going to be talking about the superwave in the galaxies and also the possible tie-in with the tsunami that occurred on December 26. William Henry, regular Coast to Coast guest, investigative mythologist, author of more than 10 books on ancient mythology, neo-archaeology with a twist, a Stargate twist. Now, by applying the latest theories in science and consciousness to ancient myths of the gates of the Illumined gods, including Sumerian, Egyptian, Holy Grail gateway myths, he uncovers the secrets of the guarded by such groups as the Illuminati. His latest book, Oracle of the Illuminati, states that we are on the verge of rediscovering the sacred science of creating peace on Earth. He's also got a fantastic DVD that he has worked on that is now out, Stargate 2012. Another book, too, The Healing Sun Code. You've been very busy, Mr. Henry, haven't you?
Yes, George. It's like, I guess, a little bit like Santa's workshop here in my office.
The tinkering away.
Every day.
Lots going on. The story that's breaking today echoes many of the things that you've talked about black holes all over the Milky Way galaxy.
Yeah, it's astonishing. I mean, there's so much to say about this. You know, this was first predicted, I guess, by British astronomer Sir Martin Rees, who back in the early 70s proposed that black holes might exist within the center of our own galaxy, and as well as other galaxies, and that these would be these black holes, or the nuclei, the centers of these galaxies would shine like 30 billion or more suns. I mean, just absolutely astonishing. And so now here we are just 30 years later, and we now have confirmation that our own galactic center is dominated by one supermassive black hole. And they're thinking there may be as many as, gosh, the number was staggering.
Thousands
of black holes in our galaxy. Now, this is a little scary because I've been a researcher of some of the Nazi occult lore, and one of the strangest things I've ever read was Adolf Hitler's belief that our universe was like Swiss cheese, solid with holes permeating it.
He might have been right.
I always wonder, where did he get that knowledge? Well, of course, he got it from German folklore and mythology and research into Atlantis and these sorts of things. But, gosh, it does certainly appear that that belief is validated.
William, there is so much to talk with you about tonight. And, of course, in view of the tsunami that hit on December 26, I want to get your take on that, too, because you have a different kind of theory. But a lot of this is based around what is called galactic superwaves.
Correct.
Why don't you explain what they are?
A galactic superwave is a term coined by Dr. Paula Violette in the late 70s and then published in the early 80s in a doctoral dissertation that he had written. And it's his term for an intense, what he describes as an intense volley of cosmic rays that emanate from the center of our galaxy when it explodes. according to LaViolette's theory, which has been confirmed by science, they tell us that our galaxy routinely, the core of our galaxy routinely explodes. It dispels cosmic dust and other matter that accumulates. And this dust and cosmic matter is then thrown outward in a, what he describes as a super wave, a shock wave that spills out throughout the galaxy. And along with it comes such things as electromagnetic pulses and later a gravity wave. And these can trigger tsunamis, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, and cataclysmic earth changes.
That's a pretty interesting theory, because a lot of people have been speculating on what really might have been the cause, what jump-started this earthquake that caused the tsunami, and this could very well be it.
Well, it could be. Dr. LaViolette isn't saying so, and to my knowledge, nobody is definitively saying
right.
so. But what the way things are lining up, it's pointing in that direction, because we are due for another galactic superwave, and we'll talk about that as we get along here, because the Milky Way experiences this phenomena intermittently about every 13,000 years or so. And according to Dr. LaViolette and others, we're due for another such event right now.
What kicks the energy that's stored in the center, the galactic center, to be released so suddenly?
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, we're talking about a black hole in the very center. We're talking about supernova explosions. It's possible, though, that this is triggered from what our friend Richard C. Hoagland would describe as the hyperdimensional realm, that it may be that our galaxy is sucking in energy from even another realm, and that's what triggers this, in addition to just the buildup of this. Dr. LaViolette envisions some form of a pumping action that brings this matter out of the vacuum of the black hole. And it just appears to be a natural sort of cleansing process.
You know, there's another theory of what occurred billions of years ago on this planet, the Pangaea, where, you know, all the land masses were, everything was connected in one. And all of a sudden it started splitting, and the splitting is still occurring. Some people theorize, and let's use the galactic superwave, tie that in as a cause. But is it possible that this very active planet that we're on just hasn't stopped developing yet?
Oh, that's absolutely the take that I would subscribe to, too, George, that we're definitely in a symbiotic relationship with the galactic center. We're constantly responding to various vibration, cosmic rays, gravity waves that are emitted from that galactic center, and it changes the surface of our planet as the core of our planet begins resonating with the galactic center. Now the surface of the Earth reflects that as well, as do each and every one of us as well.
In your research that had to do with the superwaves and the tie-in, of course, to the tsunami, how often do we get hit with something like this?
Well, the big ones happen, again, about every 13,000 years, which are key dates, because this is going to take us back to the destruction, or the period that's ascribed to the destruction of Atlantis. But there have been, it is believed, smaller superwaves that have erupted as well, that have happened intermittently throughout the past 13,000 years. And that's something else that I've been tracking and looking at the way that our religions and mythologies have developed in conjunction with these intermittent waves.
You know, is it possible, William, that with all these black holes that are in just our galaxy, that one day this solar system, this planet, could be just sucked right in and that's it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's certainly one of the theories, and then we become perhaps a black hole that's some sort of a time travel gate for travel to parallel universes. I mean, it's hard to really say what the ultimate destiny of our planet is, but it certainly could go that way.
Well, and you know, you bring up an interesting point too, William, because, you know, when you always think about black holes sucking in matter, sucking in energy, you really don't think about what's on the other side of it. And it's very possible that it could be like a wormhole, right?
That's one of the theories that's being put out there right now, that in fact these black holes can be converted into time machines, in effect.
For people who have computers, I want them to be able to follow along with a series of images that you presented to us, because during our conversation tonight, William, it will be very helpful to them to look at some of the graphics and the pictures that you have, right?
That's great. Yeah, I've put together various images from NASA and from the Chandra Observatory, as well as comparing some astonishing images from ancient religious art that appear to portray a galaxy in either its starburst phase, when it is spitting out new stars, or when the nucleus or core of the galaxy is in its active phase and spitting out various X-rays and other cosmic energy. And the reason I'm wanting to bring this to people's attention is because it raises a question. If we need X-ray observatories in order to perceive the galactic center, because we can't see it directly, there's a cloud of dust that literally obscures our view of the galactic center. The question emerges, if in fact this artwork that we're going to look at does portray active galactic cores, even the galactic core of our own galaxy, let alone another galaxy, how in the world did the ancients derive this knowledge?
I was just going to ask you that. I mean, where did it come from?
Where did it come from? That is the big mystery. And all I have are some speculations as to how this occurred, but I think as we go along, most people are going to look at the images that I presented and agree that it appears that's exactly what is going on. They are showing or representing galaxies in their active phase. It's absolutely astonishing to me.
And what I want you to do, and we'll get into this in the second half hour, this hour, William, but for people who don't have computers or they're driving, and we had a lot of truck drivers, what I want you to do, too, is when we go to each image, if you could kind of like paint us a mental picture of what this image is.
So, I'll be happy to.
So everybody can get an idea of what you're talking about here. But that is the ancients. That fascinates me, because that also sounds like some of the work of Zechariah Sitchin.
Well, of course, he was provided the stairway for me, as well as many other researchers, that enable us to kind of peer into the stars and to peer into ancient myths in this unique way. In fact, while on the subject of Sitchin, it is interesting to note that he proposed that a tsunami swept the planet, causing an apocalyptic catastrophe around 10,800 BC. That corresponds with the date that Dr. Laviolette gives for the last major galactic superwave.
And could that be tied into Atlantis? Because that's pretty close.
That could absolutely be tied into Atlantis, because 13,000 years ago corresponds to the date many give to the destruction of Atlantis.
The romantic part of me wants to continually believe that Atlantis had tremendous high technology. And then there's the realist part of me, William, that says, no, maybe it was just an island very close to Greece, and Plato had heard about it because it was there.
Well, gosh, George, I'm going to appeal to your romantic side, and I'm going to provide some images that would suggest that the Atlanteans, it would have been the high-tech civilization that had access to this knowledge. Now, whether that high-tech comes from X-ray observatories or not, that's an open question. But let us just suppose that they had some form of advanced spiritual technology, a high form of highly tuned spiritual sense in which they could, if maybe even remote view, or perhaps find some way to, in other manners, peer into our own galaxy as well as distant galaxies.
All right, I'm going to look forward to hearing that. You travel a lot, William. I think you're going to be going to Egypt this year.
September.
Not? Okay. Tell me this. In all your travels, have you ever been in a situation like this tsunami, not as bad, but where Earth changes have just been unbelievable, and you've had a chance to witness that firsthand?
Well, I traveled through I did travel through Detroit Metropolitan Airport at Thanksgiving one time, and that was about as close as I want to get.
Well, that's a rough airport.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go there a lot.
Yeah, I mean, the serious answer is no, I have not, and I just cannot imagine. I mean, I was absolutely riveted by the coverage of that Asian tsunami, and my heart just goes out to all of the families, and just was just stunned by what we were seeing coming across the TV, and but equally enheartened as well by the response that the world had to this event. I mean, this was a tsunami that didn't just happen to Asia; it happened to the entire planet. That and the ripple effects are still being felt of it, and will be for many years to come.
But look what's going on right on the heels of that. This devastation in California, especially Southern California, with all the flooding and the rain that we've had, close to 20 inches of rain, causing these massive mudslides. I mean, this planet, just something is happening to this planet. Now, I have always believed we're in cycles. I don't believe that global warming is merely man doing it, though I believe we've contributed to it. I think it was going to happen anyway. We may have speeded things up a little bit, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But in this particular case, I think something's going on with the planet.
Well, I would agree, and I think that Dr. LaViolette's superwave theory would provide a lot of food for thought in that regard. There's also, I know you've interviewed David Wilcock as well,
yes,
who's presenting some of the research by Russian scientists that are describing global warming in all of the planets in our solar system. And as if we're entering into a zone or a field of heightened energy in the, within the Milky Way itself. And that really does take us to the two schools of thought in terms of where our planet is at on a galactic scale. We're either on this end of the shock wave of a galactic superwave that is coming at us in waves, and this could account for some of these Earth changes, or we're entering into this zone of frequency.
Is this planet in your opinion, immediate danger?
I wouldn't say immediate danger, and again, going on what Dr. LaViolette has said and others, that probably not within the next, probably 5 to 10 years, maybe even not even the next 100 years.
You don't see 2012 as anything?
I don't see 2012 as a moment when all of these Earth changes are suddenly going to start to transpire. 2012 is an event that is more geared toward what John Major Jenkins refers to as cosmogenesis, of rebirth and renewal. And in fact, that's what I'm trying to root out here, is that if we're alternately destroyed by flood and fire, as myth and scripture indicates, is it also possible that we're alternately enlivened or enlightened by this same fire or frequency as well? And I believe that that is the case, that there are opportunities for humanity to spontaneously evolve by our resonance with these fires, frequencies, or vibrations that emanate from the galactic center.
You have looked at ancient civilizations. You've done a lot of homework there. I am convinced, especially through some of your work, that Earth events, solar events, are what a lot of people at that time confused themselves with the spiritual religious events.
Can you be a little more specific?
Well, I think, let's say, like Noah's, I think Noah's Ark occurred. There was a massive flood,
mm-hmm.
but I think there was some kind of earth calamity that caused it.
Oh, right. Yeah, absolutely. That what we're talking now about is that the ancient myths are, in fact, reflective of these galactic events that now we understand through science is occurring routinely within our solar system and within our galaxy. Another example of that is when the Bible talks about the sun and the moon are dimmed, and they're dimmed probably by a stellar attack. Could be cosmic dust that emanates from the center of the galaxy that suddenly dims the sun.
If you haven't been to William Henry's website yet, well, you're missing something. It's williamhenry.net. williamhenry.net. We'll talk a little bit more about some of William's work, but when we come back, get your computer fired up, and you'll see right under William's name up there, Lex has posted some of the graphics that William has provided, done by digital artist Dana Augustine. And we're going to follow through on those pictures and have William explain what they are. And a lot of them are ancient type pictures, and they fascinate me because how did these people know these things? How? We'll be back in a moment.
Want to time travel? Go back to past shows on Streamlink. Sign up online at coasttocoastam.com. City of Angels, Premier Radio Networks presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Would you like a free CD of Art Bell's interview on Mel's Hole? How about those Sounds of Hell? That is free also. All tossed in when you subscribe or renew your After Dark newsletter. Simply call 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505 or go online at coasttocoastam.com. In a moment, we'll continue our chat with investigative mythologist William Henry. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with investigative mythologist William Henry. Later on tonight, yes, we will open up the phone lines, give you a chance to talk with William. Let us go to the coasttocoastam.com website. William, under feature article, talk about, first of all, the digital picture that Dana created for us, titled, what is it, Scala Dei?
Scala Dei, yes.
What is that?
Well, Scala Dei is the Latin for stairway to heaven.
Aha.
And in fact, Scala Dei is the name of my publishing company. And when I asked Dana to create that masthead, it was to kind of demonstrate this idea of our relationship with the center of the Milky Way galaxy. There's three figures that are standing on an eight-rayed symbol that strikingly and significantly appears throughout history. That same eight-rayed symbol is the Buddhist symbol for the Dharma or the law. It is the symbol for Shambhala, the mystic hidden center of in Mongolia, mm-hmm. of Buddhism. It is also, according to William St. Clair, who built and or constructed Roslyn Chapel, is also the symbol for the Holy Grail itself. Also, John Major Jenkins has shown us that that very symbol is also the Mayan symbol that denotes the center of our Milky Way galaxy. And so for some reason throughout history, we've been incorporating this symbol over and over again in some very specific religious contexts, and only now, or perhaps we're rediscovering now, the origins of that symbol.
Have we not also looked at mythology where these incredibly catastrophic events have really, I guess, created parts of mythology?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, myth and story is the way that we encode these some of these catastrophic events. It's a manner of keeping their memory alive and also pointing to ways in which we can navigate through them as well.
I want to make sure everyone understands this when I say I believe in God. I believe in a higher power. There's no question in my mind that some force created everything that we know or even don't know. So, but now I will ask you a very, I think, strange, compelling question, William, and that is, what if there was no God, but merely these catastrophic events, the floods and the fires that occur on this planet, were there, and then people thought of it as being mythological or godlike, and therefore they created these stories of God and these fire and brimstone events. Is that possible?
That is possible, but they're, to me, just a smaller part of the greater story that enables us to have faith and to reach into the stars for a higher power. And so I think that these catastrophic events are simply milestones along the way. It's one way that we mark time. It's been 13,000 years since the destruction of Atlantis, or since Egypt fell, or since the Berlin Wall fell, for example. I mean, we tend to mark things by cataclysm. In fact, I was recently looking in the book of Isaiah, where there's a very intriguing prophecy that describes how when the Christos returns, that the light of the sun will be sevenfold, as will the light of the moon, which is very interesting because it seems to be describing a time when the sun becomes more luminous, as does the moon. And the trigger for when that event occurs, when the sun increases its intensity or luminosity as well as the moon, it occurs when the towers fall.
The towers fall.
When the towers fall, the light of the moon shall be as the light of the sun, and the light of the sun shall be sevenfold as the light of 7 days.
Well, I believe in prophecy as you do.
Right. And so my point here is that here we have a possible reference to a cataclysmic event when the towers fell.
Yes.
But immediately following it is a message of hope, that a new light is in fact coming into our world that is tremendously luminous and will bring about fantastic change.
Let's talk a little bit about some of this mythology, then we'll go to your pictures and,
okay,
and your graphics. The incredible stories of mythology also seem to be linked with Earth-like civilizations that have come from other worlds, like the Pleiades, for example. Tell me about that, some of your thoughts on that.
Well, this goes back to many of the Sumerian myths first reinterpreted by Zacharias Sitchin, in which we're asked to consider that there was a celestial cataclysm in which a former planet in our solar system called Tiamat was destroyed. Some actually believe that Tiamat was part of the constellation of the Pleiades, which was formerly called the Atlantides.
And
maybe the source of the name Atlantis.
Might be.
Suggesting that the original Atlantis story was in the stars. And as we follow this myth of Tiamat, we follow the story of humanoid figures, gods and goddesses, who came to Earth, who were actually refugees from the celestial cataclysm and found themselves regrouping on planet Earth. This is the origin of the myths and legends of the Anunnaki, for example.
Finding a planet, for example, where they could freely breathe, or do you think they had to change things for themselves or even the planet?
Well, both. I think that the stories seem to indicate that there could have been a tremendous regrouping that was undergone. The moon played a significant role in this story as a storehouse for perhaps even the genetic seed, and that they brought this genetic seed down from the moon and then began to create humankind as we know it today.
While we're talking about space and celestial things, I got to ask you this. We have just launched the Deep Impact spaceship, which is going to land on and impact into and blow up a portion of a comet. some people are now theorizing that this isn't a test to find out what the heck this comet is made of. It's a test to see if we can change, deflect, destroy an incoming celestial object. What do you think?
Oh, right. When I saw that on the news last night, I was not really disturbed, but it definitely raised my eyebrow because this goes directly to what the United States government has promised it wouldn't do, and that is militarize space. And the next thing you know, we're going to have a major space arms race, and that's something that a lot of people wish to avoid. And this seems to be yet another example of a kind of an aggressive technology that is designed to militarize space.
Do you also think, though, that they're trying to learn how to deflect incoming objects? I don't mean missiles, but an asteroid, for example, or
an asteroid,
comet.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, again, goes to this galactic superwave idea that we're talking about, because as this wave pushes out, what we're going to see would very likely be a slag heap of rocks that's going to be pushing toward the Earth from the galactic center. And this would mean a periodic meteor shower of absolutely amazing proportions. And so we're talking some very significant threats to the planet as a consequence of this. And following this, then there would be belts of more radiation pouring through the solar system. And after this, of course, is when we would get significant or just massive quantities of cosmic dust that potentially could overwhelm both the sun and moon. But again, there's also the possibility here that we're looking at an enlightening of our solar system rather than a dimming of it.
Well, that would be one of the good parts of it, huh?
Yeah, let's hope it's an enlightening, not a dimming. Because
absolutely. Let's go to the charts, if we can, and the pictures. On the coasttocoastam.com website, if you have a computer, if you don't, William will explain what we're talking about. You will see under feature article, William Henry Images, it says, and then click the portion that says page of images, and I believe seven pictures, William?
Yes.
Will pop up. Let's go to the first one called Active Galactic Nucleus.
Yeah, this is what we're looking at is an artist's rendition of what a galaxy looks like as it explodes, as the core of it explodes, and what we see, it looks sort of like a donut. If you imagine a donut with a hole in the center of it, what we've got are massive jets or plumes of energy spitting out from the top and the bottom of this galaxy or this donut shape. And this is the way they describe a galaxy that has gone starburst, as they call it, mm-hmm. when a galaxy is in its star creation phase. Essentially, that's what the core of our galaxy is a star nursery. Mystics and shamans tell us that it's actually a soul nursery as well, that this is the place where our souls maybe not originated from, but perhaps came through and then migrated to the outer edge of our solar system where we presently dwell.
Appropriate picture for today, where they release a story about our galaxy then having thousands of black holes.
Absolutely, yeah. It's very synchronistic that we're having this conversation today of all days.
Now, the illustration, this one comes from where? NASA?
This is a NASA illustration, yes. And if you Google, for example, starburst galaxy, you're going to find images such as this.
All right, the next picture is the image from the Chandra X-ray Observatory team showing how powerful jets of high-energy particles emanate from the vicinity of the black hole at the center of the galaxy. Explain that picture.
Let's imagine an egg, and we have this egg that has a line through the middle that extends through the top and the bottom of the egg. That's what we're looking at here. And in fact, the in myth and scripture, the galaxy itself is described as a cosmic egg. And it's important to recognize that in many of the early goddess traditions, they describe the creation of the galaxy as occurring when two serpents in cooperative opposition with one another split open the cosmic egg, and all of the elements and perhaps even souls fanned out into the galaxy. Now, when we look at the image that accompanies it of this Cretan vase from approximately 1600 BC, we see an image that is strikingly similar to what I just described, put up by the Chandra X-ray Observatory.
I see. All right. Now we're getting to the good stuff, where
right.
you've got this correlation here. Okay.
Right. what we see in this vase, first of all, the vase is shaped like a bird.
1600 BC, you said?
1600 BC in Knossos or Gnosis, Crete.
Okay.
Likely sculpted by a Cretan priestess or goddess.
Paint us a picture. Those who don't have computers, what does this thing look like?
It looks like a bird. A big fat bird. The vase is shaped like a big fat bird. And this could be illustrating the riddle of the chicken or the egg, which came first. And within the belly of this big fat bird, we see an egg that is being split in half by what could be these two serpents in cooperative opposition with one another that looks very much like the medical symbol of the caduceus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, splitting off from this egg, we see two spirals that are connected to the egg. Now, I interpret those as galaxies, and the reason I do that, George, is because I've also got images from the Hubble Space Telescope that show a galaxy in its starburst phase. And this one particular galaxy happened to split in two as a consequence of going starburst. And it gave birth to two new galaxies beside it.
And I see. All right.
As this galaxy split, it does so in a fetal shape that is very similar to what we see the shape of these galaxies on this Cretan vase. Now, the thing about this is, George, is that our galaxy may not have gone starburst for as many as, well, way more than a million years ago. And so the question becomes, if in fact this is a galaxy that is being portrayed here in its starburst phase or spitting out jets of these high-energy cosmic mm-hmm. particles, how did this Cretan goddess or priestess see this event?
They didn't have a big telescope.
They didn't have X-ray observatories. They didn't have any apparent means of perceiving such an astonishing galactic event.
Might they have been told about it by someone?
Well, that's certainly suggestion A as to how this occurred. This knowledge may have been brought from elsewhere by others that had this capability.
What if they were copying, for example, pictures that extraterrestrials might have brought down or something like that?
Well, it's very possible. I mean, we could, like, for example, say, well, here's the artist's rendition of a galaxy from the Chandra X-ray Observatory, and then this priestess sees this image and mimics it on a vase, and that could account for how it occurs.
Exactly.
Or perhaps she's doing some form of remote viewing. Perhaps she's imbibing, as is possible, some form of a hallucinogenic substance and is able to see these patterns that are otherwise imperceptible. It's unknown exactly how, but these are some of the means by which this could have been achieved. But the point is that I think we agree we're looking at the exact same thing.
The next illustrations, if you could, Egyptian hieroglyphs. Tell us about these two.
Yeah, this is really important research that's being developed right now by several researchers who are looking back to the time of the Egyptian pharaoh Akhenaten. A little bit of the backstory here is that we're talking at about approximately 1400 to 1500 BC.
All right, so 200 years now have moved on since that first vase was made.
Yes.
Okay.
We're in the reign of Amenhotep III. Egypt is at the height of her power. She's incredibly wealthy, extremely powerful, and Amenhotep III is the main man. All of a sudden, he abdicates the throne and turns it over to his son, Akhenaten. Now, before he does this, George, Amenhotep III constructs literally hundreds of statues to the Egyptian goddess Sekhmet. And Sekhmet is the cat-headed goddess, and she represents the sun when the sun goes into her destructive phase. And so what researchers, like, for example, Graham Phillips and others are speculating is that something must have happened with the sun during the reign of Amenhotep III. And what happened is that as Akhenaten accedes to the throne, he shuts down the ancient bureaucratic Egyptian religion of all the gods. He rips the roofs off the temples. He shuts down the temples. And he institutes the archaic mystery religion of the Aten disk, which is believed to be the sun, but may well be the Milky Way itself.
A-T-O-N.
Right? A-T-O-N. And what we begin to see in Egypt are representations of Akhenaten in very intimate scenes with his family, imbibing or inhaling, rather, the rays that are emanating from the Aten disk. And what this is suggesting to us is that something happened with the sun, and that there must have been, in my view here, some form of an enlightenment substance that came through the sun, probably from the center of the Milky Way galaxy.
Could it have been a solar flare, a huge one?
Well, and see, here's the other thing. They're now thinking that some of these solar flares are accounted for by the waves, the shock waves emanating from the center of the Milky Way galaxy. And so if the sun had undergone this intense flaring activity during the reign of Akhenaten, it would suggest that cosmic rays of protons, photons came through these flares from the galactic center, and that Akhenaten had a means to channel these vibrations from the galactic center.
Do you ever notice how funny their bodies and heads are? It's almost like they're not really Earthlings.
No, there's some very dramatic representations of Akhenaten with a huge pot belly, looking very feminine. His daughter, even Tutankhamun's head, is portrayed as elongated. And this is something that's become an object of immense fascination as well as speculation by many researchers.
I mean, if they were good artists, these creatures don't look human, do they?
No, they don't. And in fact, these are not believed to be accurate representations of what Akhenaten actually looked like. These are pointing to perhaps some capability that he had or some otherworldly bodily aspect that he possessed.
We'll get into more of these graphics and pictures with mythologist William Henry, then we'll talk a bit about some of the other very, very interesting things that he has investigated. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment. This is Coast to Coast AM.
To access the audio archives of Coast to Coast AM, log on to coasttocoastam.com.